It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. It's myself, Niall, and Andrea Cleary here. How are you, Andrea?
I'm good, Niall. It's a gloomy day. How are you?
Episode 208.
Woo!
It's gloomy outside. Are we going to be talking about a gloomy album? Maybe we will.
Slightly. Hell yeah.
We're going to be talking about the brand new, the debut full-length record, but obviously not a debut really, but from Boy Genius, that is Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers and Lucy Dacus. A trio of songwriters and musicians who started working together in 2018, originally, 2016. We'll get into all that in a second, but how are you doing?
I'm good. I have a reason to be cheerful, if that is... Are we still... Okay. I mean, have you seen the new Barbie trailer? Like the new one? It looks really good. It's my reason to be cheerful. I'm just really excited for the Barbie movie. I think I was a day late seeing it. I sent it to someone today and they were like, where have you been? So maybe it came out yesterday, but I think it looks
definitely
great.
Came out yesterday.
Okay.
Tuesday on Internet Lad. I didn't see it till today either.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
It looks
I've seen
great.
The memes before I saw the video or the trailer for it. So.
I've seen whatever memes have crossed over onto Instagram from Twitter, which is people putting their faces in the Barbie like poster. And being like, this Barbie is a whatever. And those are funny. I enjoyed those.
I presume that's an official marketing thing that's happening.
Maybe. I'd like to do it.
Fair play.
This Barbie is
Fair
a podcaster. This Barbie's okay, trying her best. but yeah, so that's my reason to be cheerful. Do I have Very another good. One? No. I liked the bit when she stepped out of her shoes and she was still on her tippy toes. I thought that was a very nice touch. Because that's what Barbies do. They're always on their tiptoes. And I was like, when she did that, I was like, ah, it's Barbie. So yeah, already thinking about my outfits for when it comes out. I'm not a pink girly, but I'll become a pink girly.
Oh, well, you can dress it in blue as well. Dua Lipa is playing a mermaid in it.
Oh.
She's dressed in blue.
Okay.
So that's what these are the things you pick up as you... traverse the interwebs on a single day. But I'd like to talk about the album from Boy Genius called The Record.
Okay.
It's an all-night drive from your house to Reno to the T-Bird graveyard where we play with fire. I guess we've talked about them briefly before in the context of maybe their original EP, 2018. What's the story behind these three? I guess they became friends in 2016. Julian Baker and Lucy Dacus bonded over reading a Henry James book. They met backstage in a venue, started getting chatting, bonded over books and became pen pals. And then a month later, Julian Baker and Phoebe Bridgers met and had a similar kind of email thread going about our art and authors and poets that they loved. And the three of them got booked in 2018 together on a triple bill. And shortly after that, they realized, yeah, we're actually very similar and we really like each other. So let's go to the studio and see what happened. And they decided to write one song. That one song became Six, and that became the basis of the original EP that they released in 2018 on Matador Records. And since then, each of them have released an album. Phoebe Bridgers, probably most famous of the three, 2020's Punisher. Lucy Dacus released Home Video 2021. Julian Baker, Little Oblivions of 2021. And in June 2020, it was when after Phoebe had just finished Punisher, she sent Lucy and Julian a demo of Emily, I'm Sorry, and asked if they could be a band again. And that was met with a kind of positive response. Julian made a Google Drive folder. I hate Google Drive. called Dare I Say It? And everyone flooded with potential songs. So I love in the bio, it's like, it makes a pointed thing of saying the first thing Boy Genius did after getting vaccinated last April was to meet up and write music together. And that's where the record comes in. And the first four songs were written individually, separately from each other. And then the rest were written together after that. And sometimes each person takes a verse and writes their own version. But the album was recorded in January 2022. Shangri-La in Malibu, 10-hour days every day for a month. Nobody questioned the schedule. Julian says, we are all at least one type of the same psycho. The Venn diagram overlap in every day for a month. So they had no problem with that. So then nearly five years after the EP, well, four and a half kind of probably, the record arrived last Friday. It's been a busy week for records, and this is top of the charts. This really feels like a big event record, certainly. I'd seen a lot of hype about this in advance of it coming out. I do think it's interesting as well, worth noting that the people that were involved in it, the team, Jay Soms, Melina Dirte on bass, Autolux, Carla Azar on drums, Sarah Tudson, who's in Illuminati Hotties, was the engineer on the record, and Catherine Marks was on co-production. So all female production team and players as well, along with the three. So, I mean, we decided we wanted to talk about this because, well, you had a visceral, literally a very immediate reaction to, is it a spoiler alert if you tell me what song it is?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm assuming if people are listening to this this podcast episode that they've listened to the album. If you haven't, maybe go listen to the album first, because there are one or two moments on it that are worth kind of experiencing for yourself. So that's your little spoiler warning. Yeah, I texted you and I said something along the lines of, Niall, this is the first time I've cried, or an album has made me cry in years, which is true. And it was that very shocking moment during the last song, Letter to an Old Poet, where the melody of Me and My Dog comes back and the lyrics are a little bit changed and the perspective's a bit changed. And I just, like, it wasn't like I was feeling sad or melancholy or it was anything that even necessarily in the lyrics. It was just that, like, it gave me such a, like, is a fright the right word? I don't know. It just hit me and I was like, oh God. And then there were tears coming out and I was like, oh, this is embarrassing. I'm crying over a Boy Genius record.
You were at home. Were you at home when this
happened? I was at home. I was alone. And it's how I would have wanted it to be.
Well, funny enough, this is something we talked about last week with Lana Del Rey, interpolating one of her old songs, Venice Beach.
Right?
In Venice Beach. And that's So this has happened again on the last track of this album.
Isn't that so interesting? That was like, that was when I collected myself after it. I was like, but Lana just did that last week. It's so interesting that there was the same idea there, the same placement on the album and everything.
Last song.
Incredible. Yeah. What was your reaction to, maybe we'll just start with that moment, that song. Did it take you by surprise or was it a nice kind of return for you?
I think Me and My Dog was my favorite song on the original EP. Mm-hmm. So it's nice and subtle though, I thought. Like it kind of slowly takes over and you're like, oh, that's, oh, I know this. Mm.
So it
it's not like,
you.
Where the Lana one feels more like, oh, I know the song immediately. This is like, hey, this is like, oh, it's that one.
Yeah.
Because I guess it did come out 5 years ago as well. So maybe I haven't listened to that song myself that much recently. But,
and I guess I can imagine that Boy Genius fans have been rinsing Me and My Dog a lot more than Lana Del Rey fans have been rinsing Venice Bitch. Like Lana has released a lot of music even since that album came out in 2019. So it's kind of the lack of music we've gotten from Boy Genius has meant that we all know those six songs from that first EP, but particularly Me and My Dog, which I think, like, you know, the fan favorite, it's everybody's favorite. It's the big one at the shows. And yeah, there are fans who probably listen to it like what, hundreds of times, thousands of times. And then just to have that as like a little kind of acknowledgement that, like, yeah, we also think that song is good. You know, we're also proud of that song. Yeah.
So the album, what I noticed about the album before I listened to it, I saw a lot of hype about it. Mm-hmm. But in the days leading up to release, a lot of big reviews, very positive album reviews.
A lot of five-star reviews.
Statements.
Yeah,
like saying this is the album that we were hoping for, but it's better than that, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of it. So I guess the immediate question to ask is, how do you think this all works for you as a debut album from the trio? I guess for me personally, it's always interesting to have three very distinct songwriters working together. I think they manage each of their own sounds pretty effectively, actually, throughout this. The only thing I will say that I think Phoebe Bridgers has such an identifiable style, and it's not just a songwriting style. It's like, it's a tone as well. And some of her songs really stand out because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think the others, and Julian Pickard's the same as well. They both have very distinct, they actually all have distinct styles, but I feel like the Bridgers ones, the Bridgers led songs are maybe more identifiable in that way. Having said that, I think it has some of the best songs in this kind of sphere for a long while. I think there are great tracks on this. Emily, I'm Sorry is one of those ones that just keeps repeating on me in a nice way. Just in my head a lot, and tracks like Satanist. I love that song.
Yeah.
So it really feels like a broken social scene song, one of my favorite bands as well. I love the way it kind of, there's a lot of screaming on this record, which is good. Well, there's two big songs with screaming on it. I love how the song kind of lopes itself towards the end. So can we talk a bit about, what do you think of it? How did you find this?
Yeah, so I was slightly blindsided by it because I forgot the album was coming out. And then friend of the show, Carlo, texted me and said, you know, it's out. Have you listened to it yet? And I was like, no. So rushed to listen to it. But because I didn't know it was coming out, I also missed the kind of review cycle. I'd missed absolutely everything about it, all the hype. So I really went in just me and the album.
Me and my album.
And it really, really works for me. A lot of it is for the reasons you said, the three of them having identifiable and distinct styles is something that I'm relieved that it comes through on the record, because they're a band, but they're also a super group. And I think the super groupness of them is a dynamic that I didn't want to get too lost. Like, I like the idea that these are three individual songwriters who are choosing to come together and work with one another, but they don't sacrifice their own identities. I also agree that Phoebe's songs are the most identifiable. I think definitely in terms of production. There's a couple of tracks here that sound like they could easily be on Punisher. I think Emily, I'm Sorry is one of them. And is it yeah. Revolution Zero? I think that also sounds a lot like the title track from Punisher. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I guess her being perhaps the more known of the three, like if you were going into this not really that familiar with the three women involved, you would probably have a good idea of what Phoebe Bridgers sounds like, whereas Lucy Dacus and Julian Baker, it's conceivable that you haven't listened to their albums before. For me on the album, it's the artist of the three of them that I've listened to the least is Julian Baker, and she's the star of the album for me. It really kind of turned me or tuned me to her voice and her songwriting style. I haven't listened to many of her albums. My understanding is that a lot of them are quite acoustic, and I do want to dive in and see if there are, you know, rock songs like $20, like Satanist, like Strong Enough, which is...
Yeah, I think the later stuff, certainly the most recent stuff, is a bit more like that.
Yeah.
Than the early stuff.
Because I love that sound. I love what she does with those songs. I think like my favorite song on it right now, I think, is Not Strong Enough. I don't know whether that's... I think that might be... I suspect it might be a Dacus song, but I don't know. But I just think the three of them fit so well on, and it really feels like the nexus of the three of their styles. But Julian on that,
I think it's
just,
all three of them, really.
Yeah.
I think it's that one is all three of them.
I just think that Julian just like shines on that one. And yeah, obviously I love $20 is her song. And I think Anti-Curse, is that another one that she kind of leads?
Her, yeah, Anti-Curse is her.
Yeah. I just love them, and it really kind of woke me up to the fact that I've been kind of sleeping on Julian Baker a little bit, so I should rectify that immediately. That's not to say I don't love the other two's contributions as well. I think True Blue is a beautiful song from Lucy.
Yeah, Dacus generally has the kind of softer songs here.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think she wrote Without You, Without Them, which is the opening a cappella track as well. I'm really happy that they opened with that a cappella track, because I think that it really foregrounded their vocals, which are, you know, beautiful throughout. And the three of them have very different singing styles.
Talk to me.
Talk to me.
Talk to me.
Until the words run dry, we'll see eye to eye. I'll give everything I've got. Please take what I can give. I want you to hear my story and be a part of it. Thank my father before me, his mother before him. Who would I be without you, without them?
Like Phoebe and Julian, much more kind of like soprano voices. Julian's a bit less soft than Phoebe in terms of how Phoebe chooses to sing. And then Lucy, very much an alto, but like a really strong, like almost like jazz sort of tone to her voice, like very, very beautiful, very strong voice. And the three of them together in that opening track just sound like a force of nature. Like they sound so, so brilliant, and it really sets you up, you know.
Yeah, that's Lucy Dacus would sing that. I'm doing the dishes, apparently. So get Lucy to do the dishes, and that's what she'll sing.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in terms of whether or not it lived up to my expectations, I think it definitely did. I didn't know what to expect going into it, because I think with the EP, I think the EP was definitely more there was more of a sense of cohesion.
Maybe they were written at the same time.
Yeah, there was a stronger sense of cohesion on the EP. Now there's four fewer songs on the EP, but I don't point that out necessarily as a criticism of the album, because I like that they've kind of stretch their wings a bit, you can kind of feel those 5 years and the different sort of avenues that they want to explore in their own music and in their music together. And that this is kind of, this project is a bit of a playground to try those things out. You know, we've had Phoebe Bridgers scream on one song before on Punisher on the last track, I Know the End, but like we get her doing it twice here. And I hope that that's an indication that her music is going to maybe lean a bit heavier in the future, because I think she sounds great doing it. I really like the record. I think it's great. I think that there's a strange, I went kind of snooping around to see what the reaction was kind of away from the papers and the big kind of music press and stuff. And I find that there's a kind of a strange reluctance from some people to like this record. And it's, you know, it's partly, I think, backlash to something getting 5 stars. You know, there's always going to be like a strong reaction to that. And yeah, but I find the reluctance to kind of, I don't know, maybe take the three of them seriously as a band interesting. I've read some interesting blogs and Substacks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. That, I mean, I wouldn't, not that I wouldn't usually pay attention to Substacks. I love newsletters, but like, I wouldn't have paid attention to them if I didn't see them having a degree of virality online, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's probably bringing us into what I wanted to kind of talk about around this album, which is the sad girl trope. But before we do that, I mean, we can wrap up what else we think about this record. I mean, were you surprised by it? Disappointed? What was your...
I don't think I was surprised. I think it's kind of, it kind of feels exactly what I thought might, what I might get from this. Mm-hmm. But maybe, yeah, I guess it's good. Like on reflection, I'm happy that it's, you can identify all three styles here. I'd rather be, oh, they're doing a whole new thing, because they're very distinctive and that's fine. And I think it's great. I think probably there's scope here for another album, which is great.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think I'd love to hear them all get in a room together. Obviously, look, one of the things that we've mentioned before, and you kind of forget to mention it, like some of this music that we're still talking about is pandemic music, you know, like it was written separately from each other when they got together to record it. Some of it was already done. They're bringing songs on from a Google Drive together. I'd love to hear what comes next after this and see how that works and see. I think the playing is really lovely on it. I think there's some great, the drums are brilliant. The drums really stand out to me as well. That's Autolux's Carla Azar. On drums, some great bass playing as well from Jay Soms and Melina Duterte. I don't know how to pronounce that, but yeah, like my favorite ones are the ones that like probably rock out the most.
Yeah, like I think I'm there as well, except for Cool About It, which is I think my favorite song on the record, which is the kind of Paul Simon.
Yeah, well, it interpolates The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel, absolutely.
Met you at the dive bar to go shoot some pool. Make fun of the cowboys with the neck tattoos. Ask you easy questions about work and school. I'm trying to be cool about it. Feeling like an absolute fool about it, wishing you were kind enough to be cruel about it. Telling myself I can always do without it, knowing that it probably isn't true.
I think that song is so beautiful. I think the lyrics in it, I guess we haven't really talked about the lyrics in the record, but I think the lyrics in Cool About It are just so, I guess, indicative of the style of songwriting that the three of them are so, so good at, which is that almost kind of diary entry, confessional sort of thing. You know, there's lines on it like, I took your medication to know like what it's like, and now I have to act like I can't read your mind. And that comes from Phoebe. It's a, it's, it's a beautiful line. It's something that evokes so much, just a lot of pain, and the melody so beautiful, and all three of them I think sound best on that track. I mean, we don't get a lot of Julian Baker's soft vocals on this record, and this is kind of one of the only instances where we really feel that from her, that sort of vulnerability. She opens the song. I think the three of them are at their best in this one, in Cool About It. But I agree with you, my favorite songs are the ones that rock out. They're like, $20 is so good. Not Strong Enough is so good. Like,
nice, Not Strong Enough, the bridge, the Always an Angel, Never a God, into the Big Glass Choruses.
Yeah.
That's the liftoff on this record. That's the one that is like you.
And how Lucy comes in and kind of takes the chorus melody like just before you come in on the one. It's always an so good. Like, yeah, it is the liftoff. That's exactly it. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, that song is a reference or response to Sheryl Crow's song Strong Enough.
Yeah, it's got Sheryl Crow.
She'll listen to a bit of
it's
that.
Sheryl Crow energy for sure.
Gonna feel like hell tonight. The tears of rage I cannot buy. I'd be the last to help you understand. Are you strong enough to be my man? My man. Nothing's true when nothing's right.
Just a brief inspiration there for that track from Boy Genius. That's Sheryl Crow.
A moment for Sheryl Crow. Like, she's not someone I listen to a lot, but whenever I hear her, I'm like, man, she's got a voice, doesn't she? She's amazing.
She does,
I'm going to listen to Sheryl Crow this evening, I think.
I was thinking about her first song that came out recently, All I Want to Do. I was like, that was such a good song.
What a
that song.
Banger. It's a great song.
Nice to see a reference like that now.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Sheryl Crow, Paul Simon, and Leonard Cohen together at last on the Boy Genius.
And Elliot Smith. Elliot Smith on Revolution Zero. Phoebe Bridgers says Elliot Smith is a big inspiration for her. Some of the lines on that song. Imaginary friend, you live up in my head, so I've been making music since you told me to do it. I just want to know who broke your nose, figure out where they live so I can kick their teeth in. So
yeah, and he was obviously the person she wrote the song Punisher about.
Did you know the Revolution Zero was originally titled, this is just for you because I know you're going to appreciate this, was originally titled Paul is Dead After the Beatles Conspiracy.
That's amazing. They should have never changed that. the only thing this album is missing is a recognition that Paul McCartney died in the late 1960s. Was replaced by a clone. I saw a nice picture of Paul McCartney at a baseball game last week with some baseball player, a little selfie, and he's looking good. He's looking healthy. Happy
Very
for
good.
Him.
Leonard Cohen as well, obviously on the title song of Leonard Cohen. A song about the three of them are in a car. Actually, she has a Tesla, Phoebe Bridgers. There you go.
Phoebe.
A woman of the people. With her pug, Maxine, heading back to Los Angeles. And they were discussing great songs with no chorus. And Bridgers played her bandmates the Iron and Wine song, The Trapeze Swinger, which is 10 minutes long. She lost sight of the GPS and her bandmates didn't have the heart to tell her she was heading the wrong direction, which added an hour to the journey. So, but they've taken that as a positive and wrote this song about it. I think Lucy Dacus wrote this song about that experience and the song Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, there's a great line from Lucy in the song. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in, which is a quote from Leonard Cohen. And I'm not an old man having an existential crisis at a Buddhist monastery writing horny poetry, but I agree, which I just think is a nice line. I don't think she's necessarily giving out about Leonard Cohen there. I think she's just calling him like she sees
him. No, it's funny. I mean, why not? I mean, horny poetry is exactly what Leonard Cohen does a lot of the time. It's fine.
Absolutely. I have a copy of one of his poetry books or a collection nearby here, and a lot of it's horny, I'll tell you that.
I think
there is also, I mean, a bit of a, I think the three of them have kind of always retained a bit of a sense of humor about this project. And you can hear it in some of the lyrics there. Like
that's the best thing. That's the best thing, isn't it? About like somebody who has already has a career and then they come together because they can kind of feel a sense of relaxation and they're playing around a bit with the interviews and stuff, dressing up like Nirvana for Rolling Stone or the most recent one I saw was they were all in a bed in like, dressed like they were in Versailles and don't really know what's going on there, but like they're just having fun. And even the video for Not Strong Enough has that kind of vibe to it. Obviously there was another video last week which Kristen Stewart directed called The Film, which is the three first songs that came out. So kind of a nice little
is that Kristen Stewart's taster. Directorial debut?
I don't know either.
It's excellent though. It's really, really good.
But there's another part about this album as well. Like a lot of it is it's a celebration of their friendship in lots of ways. There's specifically a song called We're in Love, which is about that. It doesn't have to be. If you rewrite your life, may I still play a part? Lucy Dacus wrote that. And it's kind of about her and her bandmates and the importance of their friendship and, you know,
I think you can read True Blue as a song about friendship as well. Like it's easy to read it as a song about love, you know, I can't hide from you like I hide from myself. But I think it's also like you can imagine that sharing a songwriting process with two other people that you're very close with would also elicit similar feelings to that as well. So
The backstory to We're in Love is quite interesting as well. And it shows you kind of the change of the different dynamics that exist in the group of three people. It says here, Lucy sang We're in Love a cappella to Phoebe in Phoebe's bed on New Year's Day in 2022. They were holding each other's faces, a function of totally legal drugs. Lucy was weeping and did not blink. Later in the studio, Julian thought the song was too long. In retrospect, Julian hadn't been ready to engage. When the truth sank in, the truth of a love song, she went away for 6 hours. Julian said, it's still a learning process to know the difference between being scrutinized and being seen. Then she came back. She was ready. Aww. So, you know, not ready to totally engage with kind of the subject matter. I think that's an interesting thing as well.
I think that's you know, learning something as you go along. They do so well when they talk about each other in interviews and in that song and then how they engage with each other's friendship. Like there's a quote from one of them, I can't remember which, when they're in an interview. And I think maybe the journalist suggested that when they were first becoming friends, the journalist suggested, oh, it's like falling in love. And one of them corrected the journalist and said, no, it is falling in love. Like you do fall in love with your friends. I really like that about the three of them, that they are, that they're bringing this sort of aspect of female friendship and queer female friendship into love songs, because it's not something that you hear about in songs that often, or kind of, you know, like serious music outside of the realm of like pop music and the Spice Girls and things like that, and treating the subject of friendship and the kind of love that you feel for your friends with the same reverence and the same seriousness as you would treat writing a song about a relationship, which has obviously been done, you know, enough.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Throughout the years. But yeah, I love that about them, that they are very, very serious about their love for one another, and that friendship is not second to romantic love or anything like that. It's just as important, or maybe more important, in their lives. And that kind of comes through on this record and how you see them kind of interacting with each other. Did you watch they did that Pitchfork overrated, underrated interview?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's really good. It's just the three of them, it's kind of like watching three sisters in a way. Like they like pick at each other for like, what the fuck are you talking about? And like, you know, just,
yeah.
they just seem like three people that know each other so inside out and are so secure in their relationships with one another and in their friendships that they can kind of act in that sibling way where you're just like, you know, you just walk past your sibling and just like give them a dig in the arm or something. It's really, really sweet. It's lovely. And Lucy Dacus says something about outer space, which I think I've said for years about the sea, which is that she thinks that outer space is none of our business. And I actually feel that way about deep sea diving. So when she said that, I felt really vindicated. I'm like, yeah, it's none of our business. I agree with you, Lucy. But yeah, there is a lot of their friendship and their relationship on this record, which I think is really, really lovely and really affirming for people who want to hear that reflected in music. Not everyone's sad because of a jilting from a lover. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested now, the fans of Boy Genius have, are they greater than the sums of its parts? As in, like, are people following, like, Boy Genius are playing here in Kilmainham, Royal Hospital Kilmainham on Monday, August 28th. Mm. I would guess Muna, who obviously Phoebe Bridgers guested on that Silk Chiffon song. I'm wondering if the fans are greater for Boy Genius than they are individually, or is it, I mean, I know Phoebe Bridgers is a big draw. She played here, was it last summer in St. Anne's Park, I think it was it?
Yeah, it was a kind of an odd venue. I didn't go to it, but I remember it was kind of a weird venue.
Fairview Park.
Park, yeah. So, I was like, really?
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, her appeal is definitely bigger than the Olympia, but it's probably not three arena level yet, but it could be. And there was talk about, you know, Boy Genius as well. You're like, well, the outdoor makes sense in the summer. For them, I am wondering, like, it seems like there's quite a, I mean, the great thing about it, if you are a fan of this and you're young and you're getting into this, you're like, you've got three discographies to discover as well if you haven't already.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, there's loads of music there to pour over. But I think it's refreshing. It's refreshing because it is three friends and they're great songwriters as well. And you know, that is it. I think what you're getting at, it doesn't hurt that they have a bit of personality and a really good chemistry between the three of them. And
yeah,
they like to have fun. So in the context of that, though, there's something else you wanted to talk about, which is kind of the other aspect of this, of their music.
Yeah, I guess there's a sort of an elephant in the room around this record and around, I think, Phoebe Bridgers and Mitski and Japanese Breakfast. And there's the kind of the term sad girl music, which I have used. You know, I've been a sad girl summer celebrant for a few years now, and the label itself, I don't know. I haven't come with any, like, you know, very formulated ideas in terms of, like, should we get rid of the label or should we, you know, reclaim the label or anything. But it's just, it's something that we allude to a lot on this podcast, and I see people like the three from Boy Genius and like Mitski sort of say that they don't want their music to have this sad girl label. But equally, you can open Spotify, or maybe not you and your Spotify, but I open Spotify and I have curated Spotify playlists called Sad Girl Starter Pack, I think is one of them. And I get more than you know, of these kinds of playlists recommended to me because
It's your
me.
Vibe.
It's me. Because yeah. I do. I like.
I'm looking at it here.
I like introspective.
Beach House, Julia Jacklin. Julia Jacklin is the first
Jacklin,
song on it.
You know.
Big Thief.
Yeah.
Boy Genius. Waze Blood. Yeah.
You know, it's Mitski. It's all my girls, you know. They're all here and they're all sad. But I don't know. I guess the sad girl, I've seen it used a bit to criticize this band, people saying that, or commenters saying that this is, you know, the culmination of everything that's wrong with modern female indie music, that we just reward people for their sadness, or that's the only thing that we're celebrating them for, and that it stops people from getting better, maybe. And I don't know if I quite buy that. I think
I don't buy it.
Yeah. I think there's a way of talking about the sad girl music moniker without also making it sound like you want women to cheer up. And a lot of those criticisms come across to me as, why don't they just cheer up? Or why can't they just make music about anything other than being sad, or anything other than, you know, taking antidepressants or going to therapy or whatever? And I'm like, a lot of women take antidepressants and a lot of women go to therapy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having music that reflects those experiences, do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same. It's a double standard then, because, you know, we've been celebrating sad men for a long, long time. And
I
mean, look at Nirvana, for example. Like,
they
actually reference it in the photo shoot. Yeah. Leonard Cohen as well.
Leonard Cohen.
I mean, whatever you want, it's all there.
Maybe the difference between those men and these women is that we didn't kind of invent this label to describe these men, because there were already labels, you know. It's like the sad boy music. I guess you could say that, like, Sufjan Stevens might kind of edge his way into, like, the sad girl music category, or he might be the sad boy of sad girl music, you know. You can imagine the memes if a Sufjan album is dropping. It's like, oh, check on your depressed friends today, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, it's interesting that we don't talk about, like, Alex G in this way. We don't talk about even someone like Hozier in this way. Like, there's no, we don't have an equivalent for the boys. And I think that is worthy of criticism. But also, I kind of don't mind there being something that is specific about the women that are making this kind of music, because it's women that are leading this kind of music. They're making the best music of this ilk right now. So I'm really conflicted about it, you know?
It's kind of a handy signifier in lots of ways. And it doesn't denote, like, any musical trend, really. And look, if people are expressing themselves honestly and creatively, then that's okay. Mm. And I think that's, crucially, you know, people being vulnerable is the thing here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're talking about artifice and people putting something on, and that's not on, really. If you're like wearing a coat of sadness for your art or whatever, and like, or people are telling you to remain in like depressed or whatever, then that's not on. Nobody should be doing that. Nobody should.
Yeah, I guess it would be different if the record industry was looking at the success of somebody like Phoebe Bridgers and advising artists to, you know, be a bit sadder. But we don't, I mean, right, yeah, we have Lana Del Rey, we have Billie Eilish, we have Adele. Like, we do have, you know, very, very prominent and successful. And I mean, even to a certain extent, Folklore and Evermore from Taylor Swift were in the kind of the sad girl vein. So we,
I think if it's just a changing, like, it's just a changing dynamic in the music industry and in music at large. Because like a couple of weeks ago when we had Mae Kay on from Violet Gapes to talk about this, she was like, when we were in a band, no one was talking about their mental health. No one was talking about how to look after yourself. That was not cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool now. And that's good. And I think it is good. And that's the difference. I think like when it's the women's time to shine in terms of music in this way. And if that's what we've latched on to, I think as long as it's, I mean, it can be so, it be okay to identify with that, because as long as you're, you know, as long as you're not wallowing in like, and you're just persisting with it for the sake of it, or like, you know, it's like people misunderstanding what goth music is, or what like the people who are into goth was like, oh, they're dark and depressed, you know?
Yeah.
No, and like, or people,
the goths I've known in my life said, have been among the most cheerful people. Like,
it's like music is a regulation for a lot of people. Mm. It's an emotional regulation. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
And I think maybe that's why I fall on the side of like, that maybe this the name for this so-called genre is something that maybe it's fine for insiders to use it, but using it as an insult is I think a bit telling of what it is that you're actually criticizing, that you don't like girls being sad. I think that's a bit telling. I mean, I've also seen some more kind of serious criticisms about this. I mean, if you go through the Sad Girl starter pack on that Spotify playlist, I reckon the only woman of color, I mean, you might get SZA, you get Mitski, I reckon that's probably about it. So I do think that the Sad Girl aesthetic, the Sad Girl music aesthetic, is like overwhelmingly white, and that is obviously a problem. That criticism I'm fully on board with, but it's when it's used by people to kind of to try to convince people that this isn't serious music, because it's just a bunch of girls being sad on their guitars or whatever, that ignites the little part of me that's like, I would like to reclaim this actually. And I identify as a sad girl fan, you know, these are my
women.
Well,
that's okay, because, and that's, you're okay with that. But like, what about somebody like a couple of years ago, James Blake came out and said, he denounced his tag, which was Sad Boy, actually.
Yes.
And used to describe his music. He said, I've always found that expression unhealthy and problematic when used to describe men just openly talking about their feelings. To label it at all, but we don't ever question women discussing the things that they're struggling with.
Well, James
contributes to the ever disastrous historical stigmatization of men expressing themselves emotionally.
I understand what he's saying there, but we don't ever question women's feelings isn't something that I would agree with, James. But I take his...
Well, he said the things they're struggling with as opposed to questioning their feelings.
Yeah, no, we just diagnose them with hysteria and move on. But like, but I fully take his point on the lack of conversation around men's mental health. But I mean, I'd also say that the Sad Boy label has not stayed around. Like, nobody talks about that. That's not...
Drake is the biggest proponent of Sad Boy music these days, because he likes to be miserable in himself about everything he does.
Yeah, he's just not as good at it.
Woe is me. Though, is he? Woe is me. Yeah. No, he's not.
He's just not good at it because it's not honest, right? It's like, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's Drake. But yeah, I mean, and I do also think that if an artist doesn't want to be described as like a sad girl, maybe we shouldn't. Like, Mitski's been pretty open about that. Remember, there was an interview with, was it maybe Pitchfork? One of them. It was like a video interview, maybe Vox, where she was like, I don't like that label. It's like, it's reducing my music to being, you know, oh, she's just a sad girl. I wonder how many times I've said sad girl in the past 15 minutes. I reckon it's too many.
I wish I hadn't.
little timer.
An AI editor to just clip them all together for me.
Sorry, this is completely just intrusive thought. We should do like an episode where we just get the chat GPT thing to write an episode for us and we just read it out. I've just had that thought now. We should do that. When we're really unprepared to do an episode.
I'm sure it's being done. What would you like me to ask chat GPT right now?
Ask it for a review of the Boy Genius record.
See, it won't give you that because it's not very good with new stuff. It's only good with general. I can try.
I reckon it would probably just gather together like whatever reviews are available to people and just write something on that.
Yeah,
it is incredible though. Like, it's very scary. Sorry, I know we're completely off topic, but the ChatGPT thing is very, very concerning to me.
Yeah, I think it's, I just keep seeing.
You
a
know
lot
how
of
it, I feel about progress in tech. Like, I'm against it.
Yeah,
at all junctures.
I think the what's most problematic is identifying what's real and what's not when it comes to images. The imagery stuff is on Midjourney is insane.
You look at the hands, Niall, and always those Pope
pictures.
Yeah,
I know, but even some of the hands so far been very impressive.
They can't get hands right. So I got, like, when those Pope pictures came out, I got really obsessed with, like, why can't they get the hands right? So I was reading about it, and it's apparently because, like, on a face, there's kind of only so many expressions a face is going to have. And there's going to be a lot of little nuances within that. But like a face can't like bend and twist, right? It's just a face. And a head can only kind of go like around on like a certain axis. But with a hand, you can do something like, I know listeners can't hear me, but I'm holding my hand in like a weird claw way, right? Like that's odd. Yeah. But you are also looking at that understanding like, yeah, but it's a hand, right? The hand can do that. But the AI is like, I don't know, it's got a thumb and four fingers and sometimes it does weird stuff. So let's go. It's really fascinating. I'm like obsessed with the hand thing. And it can't quite get teeth right either, even though we all have like roughly the same amount of teeth in our heads. Which I find really interesting. Anyway, that's nothing to do with any of this.
ChatGPT has this to say about sad girl music. The lyrics in sad girl music often touch on topics such as heartbreak, loss, and loneliness. Many listeners find comfort in the relatable lyrics and the raw emotions conveyed by the artist. The stripped down and intimate nature of the music can also create a sense of connection between the listener and the artist. Critics of the genre argue that it romanticizes and perpetuates negative emotions and can be harmful to listeners who are struggling with mental health issues. However, proponents of sad girl music argue that it can be cathartic and can help people process and work through their emotions.
Dude, that's exactly ultimately, what I've been trying to say very inarticulately for like the last 15 minutes.
Ultimately, the impact of sad girl music is subjective. It can vary greatly depending on the individual listener.
Thank you, ChatGPT, for that. For doing my job way better than I ever could.
Okay.
Dear Lord.
I will ask it to write me a song in the style of Phoebe Bridgers, but I need a source. A Paul McCartney song.
It's going to write the lyrics for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Write me a Paul McCartney song in the style of Phoebe Bridgers. I walked alone down Penny Lane, thinking about the days when we used to sing. The songs we wrote, the love we made, now it's all gone, like a yesterday dream. Chorus, and now I'm just a memory in your heart. I'm just a memory. I wish that we could go back, but it's too late. I'm just a memory. Oh, just a memory. The sun goes down, the night is still. I'm lying in my bed, trying to forget. The way we laughed, the way we cried, but now it's all gone, like a photograph. Chorus. Bridge, sometimes I wonder if you still think of me. Do you remember the way it used to be? I'm lost in memories, can't you see? But now I'm just a memory. And now I'm just a memory. In your heart, I'm just a memory. I wish that we could go back, but it's too late. I'm just a memory. Oh, just a memory. Thankfully, no AI was used on the Phoebe Bridgers.
No, and you can tell, right? I think ChatGPT is quite good at writing information. Maybe not so good at songs. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's just a bit my first song. And that's fine. ChatGPT is young,
Isn't
you know.
It good?
He hasn't, or they haven't had their chance to hone their musical tastes yet. So it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Do we have anything else on Phoebe, Lucy, Julian, sad girls generally?
No, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Are you going?
I think it'd be good. I hope to.
I'm going.
It's a while away.
I bought a ticket.
August.
So
very good. Very good. Yeah. I want to go see them. I think it's just down the road from my house here as well, so that always helps.
Cool.
Provided I'm around, which I should be in August. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them again. I guess I was thinking as well of Better Living. What is it called?
Better Community Center. Better Something Community Center?
Better Oblivion?
Better Community Center? Oblivion. Community Center.
Community Center, yeah. Yes. Sorry, yes. Phoebe Bridgers' album with Conor Oberst.
Which I love.
That was 2019. So another thing to throw in the mix there, I guess. But I think Boy Genius Live would be really good and I'd like to see it.
Yeah, so, I've never seen them before and I've never seen any of them individually before. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen Julian Baker once today. Or am I just imagining that? Who knows?
Ask the AI.
We're all a simulation anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yep. Roisin Murphy okay, foresaw well, it.
Yeah, that's it from us this week. We're going to be talking to Louise Bruton next week, I think, about accessibility, venues and such. So I think that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. And
what if people want to support us, Niall?
Yeah, if people want to support us, it is patreon.com / Nodder9, P-A-D-R-E-O-N.
Are you spelling Patreon?
.com. Why not? Just in case somebody's listening every week and they're like, I don't know what Patreon is. Well, now you know.
Fair enough.
It's there for you. Yeah. Last week, I gave away half price. Well, I didn't give away, but I gave a 50% discount on the Indie Sleaze night, which is happening on Friday night.
This Friday.
In the Workman's Cellar. Funny enough, I had a few messages from people who were like, why don't you put this on earlier? And I fully endorse that, but
agree.
I can't because I can't get the venue. But maybe if it goes well this time, we'll do it again. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
I'm at a friend's birthday party that night. And I'm gonna try and convince people to just go to the Workman's. So if it sells out, we'll just go to the Workman's anyway, and I'll slip in and have my Indie Sleaze. Yeah. And if it doesn't, I'll just buy them all tickets for her birthday. But I imagine it will. Get your tickets now.
Actually, it's selling quite well. It's selling quite well. So
yeah. Yeah, it's the hottest. Hottest night in town. Also I saw that there's
nostalgia is a powerful drug.
Yeah.
For sure.
There's like a sober rave on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah, in the complex in Dublin. There's, Robbie Kitt, Marcus O'Leary, and Minnie Kimono are playing in the complex on Saturday.
That's great.
From 7 to 10.
I'd love to see that.
It is 20 quid. It's expensive enough now. It's 20 quid.
It is.
That's the nature of
But you're not spending money
on
drink.
Without alcohol. Absolutely. I'm also DJing in Fidelity on Saturday, playing very much nothing like I'd be playing Friday.
Okay.
I'm going to be playing some very chill, relaxed music from literally, I've been really enjoying this the last few weeks. I've been going through my record collection and iTunes and stuff and just discovering old music because my iTunes collection started like in 2010 or 2080, no, 2008 maybe. So I have that much music on it and it's all in the cloud or whatever. So going back to stuff from a number of years ago and kind of rediscovering has been really lovely.
Cool.
I made a Spotify playlist out of it, which I made sure on Patreon actually when I'm finished. Do you know, I'm one of those people that has to go from A to Z before I can like put the thing down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still only on like F or something. I'm like, okay, I have so much more, but I might not get to all of it, but I've been really enjoying it. It's been a nice way to like go back and rediscover things that, because I'm always listening to new stuff all the time, unless it's DJing. That's why I love DJing so much, because you're like, great, I can go back and listen to whatever I want.
I once had a hard drive, like an external hard drive. It was, I think, 2 terabytes, just music on it. And it just, I think I left it beside something that was hot or near a laptop that overheated or something, and it fried it entirely. And I've never quite gotten over it. Like there's music that I will never, ever hear again because I don't have access to that. It's devastating. But I mean, it just would have been a load of Fisher Spooner, to be honest. And like, so when you played that track at the end of last week's episode, I was like, oh, I missed that hard drive. Had some good shit on it. But yeah, sad times. Oh, well, look, new start. Sadder than ever.
Yeah. It's out there somewhere waiting for you to rediscover it. You just have to remember it.
Yeah.
Very of the time. But yeah, that's the Indie Sleaze night. That's Friday night. And Fidelity Saturday. You, anything you want to plug?
Nope. Nope. Nothing. Nothing going on. I'm in my cave. I'm researching at the moment. So yeah, I'm in my cave. Yeah. I will be writing a newsletter this month. So newsletter people, hi, I'm sorry. I still love you. I will be back. And I'll be writing a little bit about something this month. So that's andrea-cleary.ghosts.io if you want to check it out. And you know, while you're checking out newsletters, Louise Bruton, who will be on next week, also has a newsletter about kind of access in Dublin, venues and things. And
Legless in Dublin. It's a Substack. You can get it. Legless in Dublin. Substack.com. We'll be talking to her next week about access issues.
Yeah.
And
go swat up before the episode, and then you'll come in.
Yeah.
No one knows. So.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. That's it from us this week. That was Boy Genius, the record. And you've been Andrea Cleary.
I have.
I've been 909.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.